We knew the economy was going to turn at some point, but you never really can be prepared for timing or speed of change.
I hope this cycle we're in doesn't take us back to the days of regulatory purgatory, where everything we did had consequences.
As the world continues to change, we have found out we need to be even more nimble as we move forward.
By requiring things like business continuity planning and pandemic plans, we need to think proactively about what we need to do in the future.
We better grab our helmets and start getting prepared today.
Banking is a risk business, but in today's environment, we are being faced with uncertain times. Financial institutions have always had partners who could help evaluate, address, and mitigate risk. But today, they need to lean on those partners more than ever. Welcome to Bank on Whitfleet. Each episode will feature discussions around industry issues, hot topics, and current trends, giving you an insider's look at how top performers and professionals are staying ahead of the curve. All right, let's get into today's conversation.
Welcome to another episode of Bank on Whitfleet. My name is Mike Bessel, and I'm a partner in our financial services practice group and will be your host. Today, we'll be talking about information technology and related issues given the COVID-19 crisis. Particularly, we want to cover what we're seeing with our clients doing related to technology, what sort of security issues we've been seeing, new risks, and perhaps what the new normal might look like as states begin to open up their economies again. We're pleased to have two of my partners from Whitfleet with us today as our guests. Durwood Furland is a partner in our Portland, Maine office. Durwood has over 18 years of experience in information technology and has extensive knowledge of SOC auditing and reporting, as well as control objectives for information and related technology, or you may have heard of COBIT before. Durwood currently leads Whitfleet's Financial Services Information Technology Audit Area. Mark Scholl is a partner from Northern Illinois and has over 30 years of experience in all aspects of technology services for the firm, focused in the financial services area, including information security and perimeter vulnerability assessments, IT risk assessments, and other related areas. Welcome to you both. Durwood and Mark, we're in a pretty unprecedented environment today from a lot of perspectives, but I'd say particularly from an information technology perspective. We have stay-at-home requirements. We've got businesses and employees in a work-from-home environment. Many institutions have parts of their staff working off-site. Some of those moves happened rather fast. Others of those moves were more planned out and smaller adjustments, perhaps, as some of the organizations already had that capability, or in some cases, probably already had people working remotely. But both types of scenarios can cause security and other issues, as we know. Since you both work with clients in different parts of the country, can you give us a little bit of a flavor for what you've seen in relation to clients working from home versus in the institution? And how do you think they've been handling it? Durwood, would you like to go first?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mike, and happy to be here today. In New England and across the Northeast, what we're primarily seeing with our clients is branches operating in drive-through mode only. Those branches that do have in-person banking, it's being done on an appointment-only basis. I have not seen any of our clients in this area operating with their branches in a business-as-usual method. Nearly all back office or operations employees are working remotely across my client base. I think it's been handled very well. After the first week of getting things up and running, the transition has gone smoothly. In fact, personally, I've done a mortgage refinance and a new automobile loan during this time, and I've had no service issues on either one.
Great, thanks. Mark, same question.
Yes, thanks, Mike. I'm seeing a lot of our clients fear, uncertainty, you know, through this disruption. Many of the remote workers are having to understand new technologies in a different environment, so they're a little out of rhythm. And when that case happens, employees don't always make the best decisions. So our internal control policies become less effective, and the hackers are going to try to take advantage of these weaknesses.
So for those who have transitioned successfully to a work-from-home environment, are there some factors or criteria that you'd say help those organizations to consider it a successful transition at this point, Durwood?
Those institutions that had remote access already in place were certainly more equipped to transition to this. They probably only had to expand upon their capabilities and not create it from scratch. Some institutions had this as part of their disaster recovery or business continuity planning, and some had it as part of allowing either some executives or some loan officers to connect remotely. So those institutions with some sort of remote access already in place certainly had a leg up when it came to making a successful transition.
Great. Mark, anything to add there?
Yeah, I found that some financial institutions were more ready than others. Some were not. Those that had a strong pandemic plan by far fared better than others. Infrastructure for mobile computers and devices, remote access with proper security controls in place. We had one client where all they needed to do was add more remote access licenses. Other financial institutions abandoned their remote working due to the lack of their IT infrastructure and support. They went to the staffing strategy for A and B teams, which would rotate over time. So they would have team A for 1 week and then team B for another week. And the problem with that is that problems can exist due to lack of cross-training and key staff not available.
So Derwood, what are the main issues, security and otherwise, that you are seeing with those institutions that have migrated to a work from home environment? Maybe a follow-up question, what have you seen as far as common problems that our clients have been addressing since the moves to more remote work?
Financial institutions have typically operated in a model where most employees work on site, except for loan officers or some executives. Remote access was not as widespread in financial institutions as what I've seen in some of the other industries that I work in. So during the first week of this pandemic, many institutions had to get remote access up and running, or as Mark just mentioned, expand upon their capabilities, their licenses, their software, whatever it may be, for additional remote employees. Now that this has been done, and we're, depending on where you are in the country, we're 6 to 8 weeks into the new normal. This is now the time to start testing these configurations to make sure that they have the security that the institution expected, especially if that was put together hastily or in a hurry so that we could get employees up and running and working remotely. The institutions really should go back and do some sort of vulnerability scanning or penetration testing of their network to make sure that they've considered the various openings that they may have made into their security and have mitigated those appropriately. Another security issue is physical security. When the employees are working on site, the institution could control the physical security of the employee workspaces, but in a work from home environment, the physical security cannot be controlled by the institution. That's dependent on the employee. So the employees do need some training in this area. Employees need to be aware of their workspace and their surroundings. The employees should consider things such as safekeeping of any paperwork that they have, or who can see their screen while they are working, and who can overhear customer or member conversations while they are on the phone. So there are a lot of security issues that should be considered when financial institutions migrate to a work from home environment.
And have you gotten any feedback, Derwood, on whether clients have been addressing those adequately, you know, sharing information on those and so on in your conversations with clients?
Those are being addressed. One of the first areas to start with is the training, especially regarding the Gramm-Leach-Bliley requirements in the work from home environment. So the training is happening. There's a lot of conference calls about this with the institutions. There are a lot of seen daily emails or daily reminders going out with some of the institutions. So this is something that is moving forward. At this point in time, you know, adding some of the testing to this to make sure that what people are being reminded of or trained on is actually what's happening.
So Mark, you know, Derwood kind of talked about some of the internal security issues and so on that the clients have been addressing in this environment. You've done a lot of work and presentations in this, around the cyber world and risks in that realm. With customers being required to bank online more today than ever, more transactions are happening, as well as, you know, more backroom activity happening remotely. Have you seen an increase in the number of attempts to obtain data or dollars from hackers? And are there any new scams that we should be aware of?
Mike, we are seeing a significant increase. I was on a webinar last week where they illustrated that there's 350% increase in viruses during this COVID-19 outbreak. They used a comparison of the first quarter of this year compared to last year. They also mentioned a 300% increase in ransomware attacks. We're seeing these through a huge increase in COVID-19 phishing scams using emails. Email is the most popular method used for attacks on these scams. They're trying to get you to click on a link in the email or open a file or trying to entice you to take some sort of action for a fraudulent funds transfer. So for the attacks against the financial institutions, we're seeing things like, you know, help desk scams. And we've probably seen these come in where it appears to come from someone who helps administer your workstation from your help desk. And they're simply asking for your password. And, you know, often when we're working in a new environment, we may be working with new technologies. We might expect the help desk to be contacting us to make adjustments or, you know, change security settings. What they're trying to do is steal credentials that can be used to gain access to your email or even other bank systems. Another one is business email compromise. And we've seen this before, but a lot of these scams are very similar to what we've been seeing, but they're very tailored to the COVID-19 pandemic. Emails that impersonate someone of authority is a business email compromise, like your CFO or your business owner. This is a great opportunity for the attack because often when we're working remotely, you know, we may get an email from who we think the CFO is or somebody of authority to, you know, buy gift cards or transfer money that we don't have a very good way to validate. So we need to make sure that we are, you know, using some sort of out-of-band method like a phone call or some other way in which we can validate that that's, you know, a valid transaction. These scams are not, you know, like $500 or $600. These are often involved tens of thousands of dollars, and they often look very innocent because they don't have an attachment. They don't have a link you click on. So they're very dangerous, but they look very innocent. And that's what makes them very opportunistic for those bad guys. The last couple of weeks, I've gotten something called a voice message scam, which includes an attachment that appears to be a voice message. And because a lot of us are at the office, we're getting these voice messages, when in fact the attachment is taking us to a malicious site, which is downloading some malicious software. Same thing with, I received an invoice scam, and this is one that's been around for a while, but continues to work. When we get an email attachment that says it's an invoice in his Excel sheet, we often think that, you know, hey, it's Microsoft Excel. We use this all the time. It can't be malicious. But in fact, they're using things like macros within the Microsoft environment, which can run code on there. In this case, the help desk was able to help me delete the message and report it to Microsoft. Then from the bank customer front, we're seeing a lot of spam email. A lot of just spray and pray type events, simple things from like emails for fake donations, charitable contributions, just trying to collect credit card information or trying to get you to download malicious code. Another one, we're seeing a popular one for the COVID-19 pandemic time is offers for free fast food, impersonating things like McDonald's or Starbucks, you know, also trying to get you to click on the link and install malicious code. You know, while we're in this pandemic with the stay-in-place compliance, many people are ordering items they'd normally get at the store, and so we're getting a lot more deliveries. So in effect, they're using a lot of the fake FedEx and UPS delivery issue email scams to get you to click on links and install things like ransomware or keyloggers, which can record your passwords from your keystrokes. And we can't forget about the phone-based phishing scams. These happened and were very popular a couple of weeks ago when the stimulus check scams came out. They were trying to, you know, entice you to provide them confidential information to allow you them to enroll into the stimulus check program. So those are some of the things that we're seeing in BESA. Nothing really, the methods are not new, but they're tailoring the scams to encompass a lot of the COVID-19 pandemic scenarios.
That's a lot of different types of scams, Mark. Are there any places that somebody can go to get some of that information other than listening to our podcast? They can then share from an educational perspective with their employees to heighten awareness?
Well, threat intelligence is very important. You can't have a cybersecurity program if you don't know what you're up against. In the information security area, I subscribe to a lot of emails, Krebs on Security, FSISAC, a lot of podcasts. For the normal end user, though, they need to be aware of this. They need to make sure that they're having security awareness training. I know you probably think that now is not the best time. Well, in fact, now is probably the best time for security awareness training, describing the scams I've listed above.
Thank you. Have either of you seen any major problems or risks thus far from a pure technology perspective with clients in the work from home environment? And if so, can you give us some examples, maybe share how they've been fixed?
One major risk is social engineering. As Mark had said, there's many different threats out there going on right now and many different scams going on right now. And in addition to those that Mark had mentioned, we also have some of the classic social engineering scams. And so when the employees are working on site, they might be more vigilant of the know your customer or the know your member rules. They're in their work setting, they're at their typical desk, they're wearing their work clothes. And so it's a good reminder for the professional setting. But when they're working from home, they need to remember that these rules are just as important. The financial institution employees are certainly doing their best to assist customers or members during this time. And employees all want to be helpful as they can. And they know that everybody is struggling during this time, so they're probably going above and beyond to help their customers or their members. But it's just as important to remember that the same rules remain in effect. And in the office or in their work setting, there's oftentimes some chatter around the water cooler or the coffee pot. So people will let each other know if something suspicious is going on or if they've gotten a strange phone call this morning or something like that. But with everybody working from home, employees probably are not as quick to remind each other about what's going on with today's social engineering. And so they need to make sure that they don't fall victim to any of the social engineering scams when they're in this period of going above and beyond to help their customers and their members. This is not the time for those employees to let their guard down. Mark had mentioned employee training. That's very important. And because of the risk of social engineering right now, this is a great time to be testing the institution's know your customer and know your member rules. One good way to test that is through social engineering testing, but they really should make sure that in addition to the education that's going on, that these are being tested as well.
Great. Mark, anything to add to that?
Yeah, workers are going from a branch to a remote environment while trying to service their customers and communicate with their internal staff. Many financial institutions were not ready and trying to find out what they needed to do to set up for a remote workforce. So those that were successful, they knew who to call. They had developed a network of people. And this is often formed through, going to banking associations, educational and network events, getting to know others. We often sponsor peer group meetings, and that's a great place to ask questions, share information about how they were addressing COVID-19. One thing that I was proud of is that there was a lot of email communications among our peer groups that we facilitated going back and forth that helped each other out in time of need to understand what people were doing as a strategy to respond to certain events, how they were going to be able to service their customers, how they were going to be able to get that work at home scenario. Lastly, contact your trusted advisors, your auditors. We see a lot of different scenarios. We communicate a lot with our clients and understand what they're doing. We can be a great resource for any of those kind of questions there. And of course, your banking associations are part of that network too that you should be forming.
Derwood, one of the concerns that I've seen and had clients raise around remote work is that we might not be able to maintain the same level of internal controls due to being offsite. I think Mark mentioned that earlier. Are there particular controls or other things that we should consider perhaps as non-negotiables from an IT perspective that we haven't talked about already?
They have been mentioned already, Mike, but the non-negotiable internal control items remain the same when employees are working offsite is what they were when they were working onsite. We just added another layer or another level to those. But logical security remains just as important as it was before. Now we just have to add secure remote access to one of the things that's being considered. Physical security is just as important now as it was before. We just also have to add physical security considerations of the remote workspace that's going on. The Know Your Customer, Know Your Member protocols all remain essential. We just need to be more vigilant about those now than when we were in the office, with the number of scams that Mark had mentioned is increasing in the risk environment that we see out there. There are no legal or regulatory requirements relating to IT security that have gone away. So if the requirement was important in the pre-COVID-19 world, it remains a requirement and it remains important today.
Great. And you mentioned physical security before, and just maybe an editorial type comment. We're obviously talking about IT security today, but I think there's probably people that are still generating some paper, you know, at home from the physical perspective. And if the rule in the bank was that that should be shredded and go out, you know, not go out in the garbage or something, I assume that that rule continues or should continue. And obviously a little more difficult for people to manage it at home as well. So.
Absolutely. The security of paper documents is very important. If there's paper documents that contain non-public private information, if that's allowed to be used in the employee's work from home environment, what are the requirements surrounding the employee's use of those documents? Do they have to lock them up at night? Do they have a way to provide secure physical storage of those documents when they're not in use? How are they shredding those? Are they saving them until they get back into the branch? Are they bringing them somewhere to be shredded? But what are they doing with those documents prior to disposal? So exactly, Mike, that remains as important today as ever.
Mark, have you seen some boards and management conducting meetings remotely? You know, I've heard of a few examples of institutions conducting even some of their shareholder meetings remotely, since we're kind of in that time of year, or have been recently. Are there particular considerations that institutions need to consider if they want to conduct their meetings remotely?
I've seen it both ways. There's some banks that have held physical meetings using proper social distancing and masks, but very few. Matter of fact, I've been involved with some of our local civic organizations, our economic development and our park board. We're, you know, using physical distancing meeting rooms where we can abide by the compliance for COVID-19 pandemic. But we're seeing a big growth in the video teleconferencing solutions. We've heard of, you know, Zoom. I don't think anybody heard of Zoom probably 6 weeks ago. There's other applications out there, BlueJeans, GoToMeeting, Adobe Connect, Wiply here. We use a lot of the Microsoft Skype and Teams for our collaboration. Allows us to have, you know, video conferencing and have that face-to-face communications. Probably also heard of something called Zoom bombing. Zoom is a very easy application to use, and I think that's why it became very popular and it took off. I don't think the application developers were really ready for that. And because of that, there were a lot of vulnerabilities. They were lacking in a lot of controls that they need to have. They had people who were interrupting or introducing distractions in public meetings, and they were participating in uninvited private meetings. So we've seen some improvements, and we're seeing along the lines of a lot of the different video teleconferencing solutions some safeguards that should be mandatory. One is a strong password for the meeting organizers for logging into Zoom or whatever solution you're using. We saw a lot of attacks as a result of credential stuffing, where they're using the same login and password from a site that had been compromised. Other controls we need to do is make sure that we enforce meeting room passwords for participants. So anybody joining the meeting is provided a password, and they'll need that in order to get in. Virtual waiting rooms, where they are, you know, in a queue for a waiting room and the meeting organizer has to allow them in, so we know who's joining the meeting, those that are uninvited out. And of course, encryption of the data communications. So anybody who might be sniffing the data communications cannot intercept or introduce malware into the systems using those.
Derwood, I know a minute ago you kind of mentioned a little bit about legal and regulatory requirements and that they remain the same. One of the things that I heard either you or Mark mention a little bit earlier was a little bit of Gramm-Leach-Bliley. Can you expand on a couple of the requirements of the GLB and you know, how those fit in to the environment that we've got today?
Absolutely. The requirements of the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act remain in place even during a pandemic, but this does cause financial institutions some extra challenges in enforcing the physical security of their non-public personal information, their NPPI, such as the sensitive customer information, when these employees are working in a remote environment. So some of the things specific to Gramm-Leach-Bliley that people should consider is the security of the virtual private network connections, especially if the financial institution had to configure that or add on to or expand upon their VPN connections for additional devices. When they switch to the work from home environment, they need to make sure that they tested those VPN connections and configurations to make sure that they do follow their information system security policies. They want to make sure that there's dual factor authentication in place over those virtual private network connections as well. Because of the rapidness in which the financial institutions had to allow employees to switch to a work from home environment, some financial institutions may have allowed one level or another of bring your own device or BYOD. So if they are allowing any sort of BYOD, they want to make sure that those are configured correctly. The personal devices might be personal computers or mobile phones, but whatever the devices are, they want to make sure that they have adequate protection over them. Is the customer sensitive data, the NPPI, is it sandboxed from the rest of the employee's device? Are employees allowed to print to home printers? Some of the printers have hard drives or storage capacity built into those. So if they're printing to them, is any data getting saved there? Can the NPPI be saved to any of their personally owned devices, such as personal computers or mobile phones? So really the BYOD, they want to make sure that they have bring your own device configurations in place as well. We mentioned some of the paper documents a little bit earlier in response to one of your other questions, Mike. Also preventing eavesdropping. The telephone systems and voice over internet or VoIP phones have allowed these financial institutions to route telephone calls to their employees while they are working from home. So when employees are answering customer or member telephone calls at the office, fellow office mates have all undergone their own security awareness training and have probably already signed the financial institution's confidentiality agreements, just like the employee who's answering the phone. But in a work from home environment, has that employee's spouse, roommate, children, other family members, or whoever might happen to be in the household, they have not undergone the training from the financial institution. They're not a financial institution employee, so they have not signed the confidentiality agreements. So we need to be very careful about what information those other people in the household might be able to hear. You know, can they overhear telephone calls with potential NPPI? That's a very real threat to customer sensitive data that was not applicable before everybody was working from home when they were located in offices. So financial institutions need to make sure that the employees are trained on protecting that information as well that can be overheard in phone calls during this time when they're working from home. Information risk assessments is something that's very important as well. Information risk assessments are a requirement for Gramm-Leach-Bliley. And performing an annual information risk assessment is something that these financial institutions have been doing for a very long time. But the financial institution's existing information risk assessments probably did not consider the threat environment of employees working from home. So this is something that now that we're settling into the new normal, they may want to go back and revisit those information risk assessments, and any new technology that was introduced, such as VPNs or VoIP or video conferencing. Mark was mentioning earlier all of the different video conferencing methods that are being employed right now. So if any of those things were not currently in use by the financial institution, they need to go back and update their information risk assessment to make sure that those are being addressed as well. And it's been said a couple of times in this conversation, but on all of these topics, you know, one of the most important things is employee training and awareness, especially for these financial institution employees that are working from home for the first time. You know, are they being provided with the training that they need and how to protect NPPI in this new environment? So they really need to make sure that the employees who are working from home get regular information security reminders and updates about the new threats that they might encounter in this environment.
Mark, maybe we can have a little fun with this question. How do you see examiners conducting IT exams in the future? You know, is their approach going to change? And is there going to be any particular focus on an area with people working offsite?
Mike, and in terms of their approach, I think they've already started a transition where they are working a lot more remotely. Through our digital transformation, they're able to get electronics documents through secure file transfer systems. They're working a lot more offsite. In regards to their expectations, well, most obviously, I would expect that they're going to expect financial institutions to have a stronger pandemic plan and also some testing that's going to resurface. We should make sure that we are documenting what has worked well, what has not worked well, and apply that to the plan to strengthen it. This should involve their IT department to make sure they have the infrastructure with the proper security controls in place in order to support the plan. I'd also expect more emphasis for strong penetration testing, social engineering exercise, and particularly the email phishing exercises.
Durwood, maybe a fun question for you. If you get your crystal ball out, and I hope that yours is not muddy like mine is, what do you see as the new normal for banking as it relates to the IT area?
This event, the COVID-19 pandemic, was a major disruptor for banking, but I think the long-term outcome will be positive for the industry. Institutions that have relied on large brick-and-mortar presence were forced to do business in a new way. But the last 6 to 8 weeks have proven that this new way works, and it works well in many cases. Customers and members adapted to using mobile apps for more types of transactions that they used to visit the branch for. The use of mobile apps for remote check deposits has gone up tremendously. Employees were able to serve their customers and their members while working remotely. The experience that I shared with you in the beginning of this conversation about being able to conduct refinancing and auto loans without any issues during the pandemic just goes to prove that. This also might show the financial institutions that future branches might be smaller. Maybe they're drive-through window only. Maybe the back office can leverage technology to adapt to working from home. But I do think this will be a disruptor for the industry and will force financial institutions to adapt or expand upon some of the technology that's been available for a long time now, but may not have been fully implemented or may have been slow to adapt from their members or their customers. I think we'll see that expanding. So I think the overall or long-term outcome will be positive as far as technology goes and adapting some of these new ways.
Mark, do you agree with Durwood?
I do. It comes down to people, processes, and technology, as Durwood mentioned. Technology, the tools are there, as Durwood mentioned. We're seeing some fantastic cloud computing platforms, Microsoft 365, Google. Others have solutions that can enhance the infrastructure to work remotely, but also provide the security that you need. Better collaboration through video teleconferencing tools, collaboration tools like Microsoft Teams and SharePoint. As far as the processes go, I think this is where the banks lag. They need to evaluate and change the mindset about the processes that need to be performed at the branch. I think often the barriers are, you know, obviously cybersecurity, regulatory compliance, cost, and risk tolerance. Do we really need to have customer face-to-face interactions? Can these be virtual? Younger generations are more acceptable to virtual platforms, and we're seeing some new applications coming out which can allow your website to provide those type of customer service virtual meetings. I think e-sign technologies are going to be important. I believe that this technology will improve and that regulators must take into consideration whether this is a barrier. Finally, the people, by having remote workforce, we can attract talent. Geographically, they don't have to be very close to the bank. It allows for more flexible work hours, but we continue to have this fear. How do I know my employees are working? We need to have this trust, okay? Now, having said that, remote working is not for everyone. Some workers have a high need for social interaction that goes beyond the virtual happy hour. I know I work remotely. I don't typically work at home. Working home doesn't really work for me, so it's been a struggle the last few weeks. I miss the potlucks, the conversations at the water cooler, you know, management by walking around, and the holiday events.
You know, one of the things that you did mention was the
I guess I'd say it's kind of around efficiency as we're looking at more remote work and so on. One of the things that we saw before the COVID-19 issues came up, and one of the things that probably isn't top of mind right now, is that efficiency. If we start to change the way we operate in branches, we had a lot of institutions inquire about the lean process. We think of that as a manufacturing process as an example, but it's probably something that we can and should be thinking about as we look to the new norm in the future, as to how do we lean up those processes while still maintaining controls and so on as we operate differently going into the future. So with that comment, I think we'll probably wrap our conversation up today. I'd like to thank Durwood and Mark for taking the time to help us get up to speed or stay up to speed on this topic. I'd also like to remind everybody listening to please visit www.wifley.com for our COVID-19 Resource Center for lots of great information about current topics of interest. Until next time, this has been a Bank on Wifley podcast.
You've been listening to Bank on Wifley. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and tune into the next episode as we feature insights from other leaders in the financial industry and even more ways you can stay ahead of the curve.